FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. And you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. And I'm Kerry Lutz. Today, believe it or not, is January 27th, 2018, and it's time for another Triple Lutz Report. And this is episode number 438. Getting close to 500, aren't we? Well, hey, wanted to talk about Bitcoin, about the North American Bitcoin Conference in Miami Beach, everything that we did there. Hey, white paper is done. I will send out a link. You can easily download it or print it off the site. So if you haven't already signed up for it, email me, kl@kerrylutz.com. Hey, the usual housekeeping stuff. We love to get your emails and want you to be part of the show. Don't forget, the Twitter feed is @KerryLutz. I'm sure they have shadow banned me. I realized a long time ago that a lot of people look at my stuff, but they try to hide it somehow. You know, that's thank you, Jack Dorsey. We know you're good at that. The Facebook page, which doesn't have seem to have any care about me whatsoever, which is the way it should be, is Financial Survival Network. Hey, remember, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's a really simple process. If you got a Mac, you've already got iTunes loaded. If you have a PC, you probably have iTunes, but if you don't, just go over to iTunes.com and download it. Then you go to the iTunes store, type in Financial Survival Network or Kerry Lutz, click enter, and you will see a subscribe button. Subscribe. The show will automatically be downloaded to your computer. So you'll receive it. You don't have to go looking for it on the site or in iTunes. It'll automatically come up on your computer or your smartphone. You know, the smartphones, there's a whole nother way of subscribing. You just go to your smartphone podcast app. If it's an iPhone, it already came loaded with it. If it's an Android, you have to load the Android app, and then you can subscribe to the show there, automatically downloaded. Anyway, getting back to cryptocurrencies, depending upon whom you ask, Bitcoin and the thousand or so other recently introduced cryptocurrencies, or as I would call them, wannabe currencies, are either the future of money with all the profit potential that that implies, or they're a financial bubble on a par with subprime mortgages and dot-com IPOs. Take your pick. No one really knows for sure, but John and I received a lot of questions about it, so we put together our white paper, and just email us over at kl@kerrylutz.com and get a copy for yourself. So when I went to the North American Bitcoin Conference in Miami, so I only had to go about 50 miles or so to get there, downtown, you know, like downtown's a madhouse, Brickell, that area, the financial district. You could just have a nervous breakdown looking for a parking space. But my friend Jeff, my oldest, dearest friend in the world, we've known each other since we're six. I mean, you know, it's over 50 years. He's into the blockchain like nobody's business. So we went down. We saw Dan Amadori there. So our good friend Teresa Kuhn, Kenneth Amadori, and a lot of other people. Berwick was there. But believe it or not, over 4,000 people attended, and there were more millennial billionaires and 100 millionaires in one place than we'll ever see again, at least in my lifetime. 30-plus companies that were blockchain-involved entities. Either they're selling something, they're doing a crypto, they're coming up with smart contracts, whatever, presented at the show at a cost of about $20,000 per 15 minutes. One company that you heard me interview raised over $1.3 million from their attendance at the conference. So it was obviously money well spent for most of them. Hey, our good friend Jeff Berwick was there preaching his anarcho-capitalist way of life, and he was very well received. So these are younger people there for the most part, but from every walk of life, every religion, every race, you name it, countries all over the world. And every one presenter had a similar story to tell/sell. The blockchain is revolutionizing commerce, law, banking, investing, and any other sector of the life that you can think of. Whether you're looking for AR, That's augmented reality glasses, looking to invest in ultra expensive supercars, or you'd like to put your money into an advanced alt currency trading platform, this was the place to be. And there's no doubt that a number of these people were pitching ideas that aren't going to fly. The difficulty was separating the scams from the brilliant ideas that can make you rich beyond your wildest dreams. They all seemed so sincere and enthusiastic that you would have had to be a fool not to invest your life savings, mortgage your home into blockchain and crypto kleptocurrencies. Needless to say, the vibe at the show was quite similar to the 2000.com bubble. However, one thing is absolutely certain. Much of the world's problems and its current inability to deal with them can be effectively addressed by the blockchain. Like any other innovation, the blockchain can be used for good or for evil. When properly executed, the blockchain itself is incorruptible and immutable. The ability to keep track of things such as ownership rights, title, and interest in intangible and tangible property is truly being revolutionized, and everyone wants a piece. There were people, like I said, from all levels of sophistication and understanding attending, and like I said, the blockchain is truly colorblind. The real question is, how do you capitalize upon the opportunities thus presented? And unfortunately, there is no clear answer. Of most interest to me personally was a group of attorneys who discussed numerous blockchain legal issues. This was from initial coin offerings known as ICOs, SEC practice. But the thing that they talked about that was most concerning to myself was the practice of painting the tape. And that happens when big market actors conduct a series of trades to manipulate the price, making it go up or down. And then they cash in on the resulting price movement that they initiated. And the attorneys were quite conversant, well-schooled in the ways of the blockchain, and appeared to believe that this practice was quite prevalent, which doesn't surprise me at all. It explains a lot. And it makes total sense that it would be. For all the hype about Bitcoin and its valuation, the fact is that Bitcoin is very lightly traded compared to things such as FX, stocks, bonds, etc. You know, 400,000 plus transactions a day in Bitcoin ain't a whole heck of a lot in the scheme of things when there's probably tens of hundreds of millions of transactions happening every day in other markets. Because the markets for crypto wannabe currencies are really very shallow, bordering on illiquid, the big players are presented with an opportunity to cash in on these divergences through computerized arbitrage. In addition to the altcoin marketplaces and other venues in which to purchase tokens, they're not synchronized. So instances of misvaluations and mispricing are rampant. Therefore, sophisticated traders with the proper platforms, which are unavailable to the ordinary alt currency investor, have the ability to reap huge rewards with almost no risk. And in fact, it would not be a surprise if there were many of the so-called flash boys who have given up high frequency, or as I call it, high-frequency fraud, high-frequency stock trading, and instead switch to high-frequency kleptocurrency trading. Regulation in the space is in its infancy, and I'm not sure that there's anything known as insider trading in the cryptocurrency space. Maybe if you've registered with the SEC, they could, or the commodities future trading could conceivably regulate it, but rules against price manipulation right now are virtually non-existent, and therefore the large actors can band together and manipulate prices at will without fear of accountability, regulatory action, or, God forbid, jail. But to libertarians like myself, this isn't such a bad thing. When we look back at the history of the SEC from passage of the Securities Act of 1933 to present, Bernie Madoff included, many frauds have been perpetrated in spite of stringent disclosure mandates. Well, and it's happening right now in places like China. Even when they are registered with the SEC, they've got a very loose definition of what financial accounting is. So while disclosure, sunlight, and transparency should be the hallmark of any financial market, in many ways, the U.S. regulatory schema has failed miserably to protect unsuspecting investors and continues to fail, I might add. Look, the big fraudsters, the people who run the world, never let a little thing like securities laws get in their way of taking your money. And the problem is further aggravated by the opacity of crypto markets. In addition, prices have done nothing, almost nothing, but go up since the inception of Bitcoin. And this has led to a common investor misconception or fallacy that Bitcoin only goes up. Where have we heard that before? Oh, right. Stocks only go up. Well, so far they have, with some nasty little intervals where they go down violently. Same with housing prices. Housing prices only go up. Didn't you know that? Unfortunately, these naive speculators are finding out that markets go both ways, often quickly and violently. And these words are only meant as a warning sign to the unwary. The future is indeed bright for the blockchain and blockchain applications. However, the market must mature, and unfortunately, regulation will become commonplace. Whether this regulation can actually protect marketplace participants, which is what it's supposed to do, to me, at least, is an open question. And I'll give you an example. I interviewed a principal in an offering called Bitcar. Their goal is to tokenize exotic car investing. And over the past several decades, this asset class has been a stellar performer. One example, a 2005 McLaren sold for $1.5 million at that time, fetched $15.3 million this year at auction. And their initial coin offering, or ICO, isn't being sold to U.S. investors. Interesting, isn't it? Maybe it was just too hard to comply with U.S. securities laws. However, once the token is in distribution, meaning once the initial coin offering has been completed, there's no restrictions. Investors from any place in the world are free to purchase it on the secondary market, on these exchanges. This is a clear end run around countries with strict regulatory systems that hinder or hamper both legitimate and sketchy promoters. I'm not passing on Bitcar. I'm just saying it's interesting the way they're doing this. So blockchain-related tokens and alt currencies, they're a global market. The world is ill-prepared to manage the implications and risks these markets present. Governments are either unwilling or unable to effectively regulate these markets, and many countries are loath to interfere what is shaping up to be the next gold rush. So scams, as you might imagine, are commonplace, and there's very little being done about it. And this is perhaps the greatest challenge over the long run. So that's it. Take it for what it's worth. Those are my candid views as a recovering attorney and as somebody who follows the space and has been following it for years. I'm only sorry I didn't buy it earlier, but hey, I own a little bit and enough is enough. So something I want to talk about here. QAnon. QAnon, if you haven't heard about him, he posts to 8chan and 4chan, and these are like Reddit-type boards where techies inhabit them. And he's been posting vigorously. He appears to be a White House insider or an intelligence agency insider with a security rating of Q, whatever that is. I think that's the highest. So what he's been talking about, and a lot of his stuff has been spot on, but some of it could be coincidental. I'm not convinced of his efficacy. I'm leaning towards that he's legit, but he's talking about a purge by our president of the deep state. And what's happening now, if you haven't seen the memo about the House Intelligence Committee chairman has created, Devin Nunes, talking about the whole Russia conspiracy ridiculousness, which I've always believed is ridiculous and have never put any stock in it. Because look, it's not that Trump wouldn't do it. It's just that conspiring with the Russians ain't going to get you elected. They hacked millions of voting machines, right? So according to QAnon, and Trump signed an executive order month and a half ago. I've been meaning to talk about it, but I didn't really want to get into the whole conspiracy-ish stuff. But he declared a national emergency from child trafficking, human trafficking, and corruption that, according to the executive order, said that it effectively threatens to undermine governments and effectively the world order. You know, if you're the conspiracy theory and you think that the Rothschilds or whomever have been running the show for 500 years and they're just going to keep doing it, or 400 years, whatever it is, it's unimportant, and that all of these Illuminati and evil people are running it, then this thing is for you. But there's certain things you can't deny. Since Trump came into power, many thousands of pedophile traffickers and kiddie porn purveyors have been arrested by the Justice Department in raids. We know this for a fact. Just Google it. These pedophile rings appear to be rampant around the country and the planet. We know that all this stuff is coming out about Hillary Clinton and her cohorts, evil things that they did, the way they basically prepared this Russian dossier, gave it to the FBI, and then the FBI used it as the basis for surveillance on the Trump campaign. These facts are virtually irrefutable, even if the mainstream media refuses to cover it. And we know that all sorts of weird stuff has been going on all over the place. Supposedly, there are 10,000 sealed indictments from courts around the country, federal courts, waiting to be executed upon. They're speculating these people are going to be sent to Gitmo because they don't trust liberal judges and manipulated juries to properly try these cases. And it's obvious that from the beginning, they've been out to get Trump. And perhaps the most attractive thing about Trump is his enemies from both sides of the aisle. They've really exposed themselves. Outfits like National Review Online have turned out to be totally against the agenda that they purported to support for all these years of limited government and freedom and financial freedom. They seem to be just another interest group think tank out to take money from whomever will give it to them. So when you look at all of these things, it's maybe this QAnon has really got something. Alex Jones believes it's true. Roger Stone, who will try to get back on the show again, he's convinced QAnon is real. And there's other insiders coming out now and speaking. Now, this QAnon, if he's really in the loop and he's real, he's doing it with the express support of the president because he's right there. And some things come up and they're uncanny. He talked about false flags attacks last week. And that was the week that the Hawaii had a missile warning that turned out to be false. And then Japan had one. And there were other things going on, school shooting in Kentucky. All of these things appear to point to a major conspiracy against Trump. And, you know, the facts that this guy comes up with are just too, I can't even begin to tell you, they're just so incredible, but they appear to have some credibility. I can mention a couple of them to you. Let's find. Let's take a look. The storm update disclosure news. That's not it. Hold on one second. We'll find it. You know, this guy, Jerome Corsi, he's the expert. He's the expert at reading the Rosetta Stone and figuring out, because these messages are rather cryptic, but they talk about human trafficking and the president's order against human trafficking. And that order, by the way, that executive order dealing with human trafficking and corruption and declaring a national state of emergency, it was so well written. I don't know who wrote this thing, but somewhere in the bowels of the Justice Department, or perhaps in the White House, in the West Wing, there's a very talented young, maybe not so young, attorney who has such a beautiful way of dissecting things and stating them. This thing took the person weeks to write. I mean, as a former attorney, the quality of the legal drafting, especially for government attorneys, yeah, they draft briefs to the Supreme Court real good, but most government writing isn't that great. It's mediocre. It gets the job done. This, the clarity and the focus, I would urge you to read that memo. I'll put a link up in the show notes to it. Just read it. It blew me away. I could not believe the quality of the draftsmanship. I was kind of jealous. I mean, I could write pretty well. You've read my stuff. But reading this was really amazing. It was just so well done. And he keeps talking about Twitter censorship on the internet through Facebook, through YouTube. I haven't so much encountered it on Facebook. YouTube, definitely. They minimize my videos and stuff. It's just pretty amazing when you read some of what he has to say. I'm just looking for a couple of things here, but it's hard to decipher them. You really have to look at somebody else's work. But just what I suggest you do is Google QAnon, the letter Q, A-N-O-N, and take a look at what he's got. There's a lot of YouTubes. Everybody has become a QAnon tea leaf reader. And, you know, there's something there about Pizzagate, Julian Assange being freed, which he's in the process of doing now. There's just so much going on here. The billionaire Saudi Prince Al-Waleed is released from detention. What are they going to do with him? It'll be interesting. Did he surrender his fortune? I don't know. But this guy, Jerome Corsi, he seems to be the guy who is the lead decipherer. And one, they say that those 50,000 missing text messages from the FBI that they tried to hide from Congress and were so-called lost, discussed Trump assassination, so much more that you can't believe it. And QAnon also talks about Pizzagate, which is the whole thing of what's going on in DC with pedophilia rings. I'm not going to get into the exact details of it. You can look it up, but I'm beginning to believe that there are some truth. There is some truth to what's been stated here, and it's frightening, but he's optimistic. You know, a few weeks ago, president said he had a bunch of military leaders in the White House, in the Oval Office, and he said offhandedly, this is the calm before the storm. And what these people are saying, the storm is going to be a takedown of the elite, of the whatever you want to call them. I'm not going to call them Illuminati, but, you know, we talk about stuff like Operation Mockingbird, which is the CIA controlling the media to control what you think. Hasn't worked out so good with the you know, it just hasn't worked out so good lately with the internet being the great equalizer. There's a lot here beginning to look more like it's probably some truth to it, but I'm waiting. I'll believe it when I see all of these people get arrested. Until then, I'll be skeptical, but I'm leaning towards thinking that it's real. In other information, Comrade de Blasio, the rumors are he's ripe for a takedown. Supposedly, they've got some guy who offered to bribe him. I don't remember his name. He was a foreigner or of foreign descent and gave him money, cash, whatever. You know, I never talked about that. I thought for sure that Preet Bharara was going to take him down, but Preet is part of the storm. He's part of these evil people that run things, and no wonder Trump fired him. He had it coming. He happens to be a very articulate, bright guy, but he's still no good. He let Comrade de Blasio off the hook, and he let the governor off the hook, and now he just left the mess for Sessions / Trump to clean up. But I believe that Comrade's days are numbered. I think that Trump, knowing him, has a special place in his heart for the Comrade, for helping to bring down the city that Donald helped build up again, and the city that Donald Trump loves with all of his heart and soul. He's always been there. Wherever he's gone in the world, he's always come back to New York. If you noticed, he could have moved out. It'd be a lot cheaper for him to move out than to pay New York state and city income taxes, but he never did. Why is that? So, Comrade, if the rumors are correct, and right now they're just rumors, I have no idea, no knowledge if they're true or not. But I read this and I said, hey, if you're going to take out all of these people, all of the conspirators, Comrade's right at the top of the list. You got to get him. He's got to go. Anyways, that's it for now. Questions, comments, email us. Be part of the show. KL@KerryLutz.com. Twitter feed @KerryLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. I love doing this. We'll talk to you again soon. And I'm going to set up a hotline shortly so you can leave phone messages. I know a lot of you like to do that, and we will play them on the show. Good, bad, ugly, whatever. So stay tuned for that. We love this. We love you guys, and keep listening.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.